Welcome back, everybody, for another Uncomfortable. I'm Kirk, joined by Vince. And today we want to talk about gearing up for battle, building a team for missions. Now, Vince, you and I have both gone to Christ for the Nations Institute, which is a Bible training institute. And one of the heart and soul missions of the school is to get ready people to go into the mission field and to bring people in from other nations that are native speaking individuals, you know, to their own land, train them up and send them right back to their home nation as a missionary to their home country. And so you and I have almost a DNA that's been engrafted into us to take us right into that heart and soul of reaching the nations for the gospel. Now, there's several things. I mean, you and I both could probably talk a lot about missions, you know, how it's so important to be built up spiritually, to prepare yourself. And it's so important just to even have a strong relationship with Christ as you get ready for missions. What type of things do you see with your student body and also the staff there at Christ for the Nations as you begin to prepare students for this work?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing I see is they start months ahead of the actual trip or even, so CF and I does all of their missions trips during the summer, along with their youth and kids camp that they do, KFN, Kids for the Nations, YFN, Youth for the Nations. All that's during the summertime. And so their first mission trip leaves, I think it's like the second weekend, sometime around the second weekend in May, usually. You may be starting that Saturday, Sunday, or even that Monday after, whenever's after graduation. And they kind of leave staggered from there. And they're gone for about 3 weeks at a time, maybe a little more, a little less, depending on the trip. And they do international and what we would consider local missions, meaning that they do some places here in the United States, right? But when you sit down and look at the way they start, it starts all the way back in, so now we're sitting in May, right? They started planning for this back in August or September of last year. So they had to pick the leaders to lead, and then those leaders had to pick their people that they wanted as their leaders with them. And then they had to open it up to the students so that they could decide what they wanted to be a part of. And then they had to go through the fundraising aspect. I mean, if we're talking practically for a minute, I mean, you're building your team, you got to pay money, you got to raise money to go, and you know, you've got plane tickets and luggage and all the other stuff that you might bring with you, depending on what you're doing while you're over there, wherever you may be. So there's a lot of just logistical work that goes into this. It's not like they just woke up one morning and said, "Hey, let's go to Brazil." You know what I mean? So
I know exactly what you mean.
I mean, you're pretty, I know more about the background and all the back work and even the spiritual side to putting camps and conferences together, whereas you know a whole lot more about the actual missions trip side. I did get to see of that from this year from a friend. I was sitting down and they showed me their kind of like paperwork, what they go through, and their logs and all that they do beforehand. And I was like, wow, that is a lot of details. That's just to open up the trip. You know what I mean? So,
well, what's the most interesting and sometimes the fun and not fun part of international missions is when you as the American, or I don't know about other cultures, but you're trying to coordinate with someone from a third world nation. And you're like, I need this information. I need an itinerary. I need to know when we'll be, what date, what time things are going to happen. And you're trying to get all the pieces put in place. And they're just like, Well, things just kind of happen. It's like, no, things don't just happen. We have to plan. And I know, like, when I've worked with folks out in the Amazon jungle, I've had to tell them, say, look, we have to have a plan. Even if Holy Spirit completely puts everything on top of its head, everything changes. We have to have a plan that we're shooting for, even if things don't happen that way. You know, because if you don't, you plan for failure. And that's just the way it is. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're in business or if you're in ministry. If you have no plan, you plan to fail.
Well, and then there's the factor that some people are more go with the flow and others are more like rigid and they need that schedule to function. And so, yes, they need to learn how to go with the flow, but at the same time, everyone can appreciate the fact, even the go with the flow people, that they can look at a schedule and go, okay, we need to be up and ready to go by 8 o'clock. It doesn't matter if we don't leave till 10, whether you like it or not, but we need to be ready to go at 8. We need to be, we have had to had our coffee, have our breakfast, use the restroom, whatever you need to do before we leave our domicile, wherever we're at, whether it's in tents, whether you're in a hotel, no matter what it is. And a dorm room somewhere. You got to be ready. You got to be there at this time. We're having a team meeting. After the team meeting, we'll pray, we'll get set up, and we'll head out. If you're moving at the speed of whatever people that you're a part of, some move quicker, some move slower, depending on what country you're in. And that's what you do. You can't do nothing about that. But everybody appreciates having at least a basic schedule to run by. We plan on being at the dwelling wherever we're staying by about this time. Well, if God takes over and you have a service that goes long, okay, then that means it's going to be a little later than that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I think the biggest key, and like what I've had to coordinate with our partners out in the jungle, that I've told them is like, look, we understand things are not predictable all the time, but if you don't have something that people are aiming towards, no one is aiming towards anything. And
Useless.
it's the more people you have that are working together towards an end goal, then the less successful that goal will be if no one has direction. The word even says that people that don't have, prophetic vision, they kind of end up in turmoil, right? They kind of go astray. They go their own way, when they don't have a prophetic voice. So, if the word itself is telling us that people need direction, pretty much is what it's saying. You know, then we need to make sure that we're diligent in being intentional with our time, especially when we're doing work for the King, the King of Kings. And the one thing that I've learned, and let me prerequisite this, because some people know me, other people don't. I've always been a more go with the flow person. I mean, at one point in my life, I was very structured. Then I became very whatever, let's just get it done. But I found through work and life experiences, if you don't have a plan, then you tend to go in circles.
That's an accurate statement.
Because you'll sit there and chase your tail to try to come up with a response or to figure something out because you didn't plan on how you're going to get 5 or 10 or 12 people from, for an example, the city of Iquitos down to the small town of Malta to catch a boat taxi, right? That's going to get you into the middle of the jungle. Well, it doesn't happen by accident. You've got to be very intentional. Those things have to be coordinated. And many times you've got to schedule those things in advance to make sure that there's seats on those t boat river taxis so that you can get where you need to go. Otherwise, you may, instead of getting a 8 to 12 hour ride, it's going to be 12 to 24 hours to go the slow boat. And even then, if you don't have a seat, you might be waiting another week to get down the river. So, coordination is a very strong key in missions work. And if you don't want to waste time and resources, then you have to plan. And here's the thing. Some people might think, well, it's not that big a deal. It's all ministry work. But wait a minute. We're doing work for the King of Kings, which means we have to be diligent with the money that we're given so that we can be faithful with it, so that we can have the best return on investment for every penny that we spend, right? So we don't want to have to spend that money two or three times. So we need to make sure that we are intentional with the way we plan, so that we don't have to buy tickets for the fast boat and then have to go to the slow boat anyway, right?
Right.
We want to make sure that we only have to spend that money once. Otherwise, when people sow money into the work that we're doing, it's not, if you don't plan right, then you're not going to be faithfully stewarding that money. So, in the same way, if you've got a group, like, for example, at Christ for the Nations, they're getting ready for youth camp,
Right.
youth for the nations. If you don't have your leaders ready to train up all the leadership roles that are needed, and they're just kind of there, kind of stirring around, have we been faithful? Well, I'm not part of that myself, but you or whomsoever is a part of that group.
Yeah.
Would they be faithful if they didn't properly train and lead those people so that when the parents drop their students off, would it have been faithful to have an unprepared group of people to be leaders?
Well, no, I mean it actually in that sense, especially when you're dealing with teenagers, it invites disaster. You know, when people
Exactly.
aren't occupying a specific role, it gives more of an ability for people to do things that they shouldn't either shouldn't be doing, or that they do something that could even harm themselves and nobody's around to know that. So, you know, something
Well,
that might
that's the thing. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying something that you know, we kind of talked a little bit about the logistical side of that, and I'll touch on the camp side because I'm a little more familiar with that just real quick before we I'd like us to transition into to the more of the spiritual, mental, emotional side of things.
Okay.
Because I do think that there's some similarities, but I think there's some differences also in when it comes to preparing spiritually, mentally, and emotionally for a missions trip that don't exist with youth camps and kids camps. So the logistically speaking, I mean, with a camp, there's other liabilities that exist that although some of that does exist with going overseas, you know, if you're doing it here in America, you're doing a camp here, there are legal things that legal things that have to be obeyed. So there's legal rules that need to be put out through descended disseminated amongst all of your leadership about when it comes to interacting with teenagers a certain way and kids a certain way, making sure that adults are trained on how to handle certain situations and certain things, and that if something else is done, that they need to go higher up and get other people involved other than just trying to do it themselves. And there's so many other aspects of that kick in. But like you had mentioned, even with finances and stuff, they have to start raising money or get money from somewhere ahead of time. They have to create a budget because they can't just spend wildly, although everybody wants to spend wildly. And when it comes to a camp like that, it's like, oh, well, kids like big and flashy, so let's do big and flashy. And you gotta to mitigate that with, okay, well, we can't afford to do big and flashy, so let's just do flashy, or let's just do big, or let's just do neither, and just trust that Jesus is gonna show up and do what he needs to do. So it there are these different aspects of things that you need to have and need to have in place. Like they have to have somebody that's on staff, that's a nurse at all times. So during the course of the summer, and they usually do. So like not just for both camps, but per camp, they have that. So those are some of the logistical things that people don't think about, you know, making sure that you've got dorm monitors and that you've got people that are just kind of roaming the halls, so to speak, roaming the campus and kind of keeping an eye on things, lifeguards and so many other things that need to be taken care of, so that students can be watched over, that teens and kids can be watched over and they're safe. You know, parents are entrusting you with their children.
Right.
Know, you have to sign like medical forms and waivers and all these kind of things like this, so that if somebody stubs their toe, they can't be sued because it's not their fault that they stubbed it. It's not the camp's fault that you stubbed your toe on a rock that probably was on the ground 100 years before the camp ever existed. So, you know, so things like that, it, just simple, basic things. But I don't want to dig too deep into that. I want to head into the other side. So, of course,
Absolutely.
for both of them, the main thing that we have to do is prayer, obviously. I mean, continuing to pray not only for God's grace and God's favor and for his presence to be with you and to move, but also praying for things like protection, praying for coverage, praying for those that are either coming to the camp or that you will be encountering while you're on that missions trip and whatever you're doing on that trip. Doing a work in your heart, helping to heal things, helping to set you free from some things,
Oh, yeah.
creating a bond for the team, which logistically it's also doing things together so that you can bond, but creating that bond with the team so that you can function as a unit, as one, and things like that, right?
Now, let me ask you something. I know that when we prepare to go into mission fields out into whatever nation, right?
Right.
We try to have prayer nights at least once a week before we go on the mission trip. Normally, we
Yeah.
do 4 to 5 weeks beforehand, at least once a week. Do you do that with the youth camp? Because we find that it, like you said, it builds unity, but it also it paves the way spiritually.
Right.
You know, because sometimes there's things that you don't know that's going to happen before you get there, but you can begin to pave the way in prayer. And sometimes Holy Spirit will begin to open your eyes to understand, okay, there's going to be a breakthrough that's going to happen while we're there. And sometimes he'll give you hints as to what those breakthroughs will be, like little hints to look for, like needles in the haystack, so to speak. And sometimes you'll know that, okay, there's going to be a young mother that's going to be touched. And sometimes you'll know, oh, there's going to be a child that's going to get healed, or there's someone that we need to look for that we need to help them find food. You know, and some people might say, well, all that's basic. You know, you're in the third world country. Yeah, but the thing that he gives you is normally so specific that when you
Yeah.
see it, you know this is the one.
Well, I don't know the specific date that or amount of time that they start in, but I do know that in the spring semester they start praying on a weekly basis for camp. And different groups even pray individually for things during camp. So I'm venturing to say there's at least 2, 3 months worth of prayer, if not more. I'd say 2 or 3 months worth of prayer that are dumped into the camp on a weekly basis once the spring semester comes in, but I know they're also praying through the fall as well.
Very nice.
So I know it's definitely bathed and covered in prayer. One of the things they do for camps is they always come up with a theme every year that God kind of gives, and I know some mission trips kind of do that too. There's a certain theme that God kind of gives them. This is what we're going to be carrying with us on this trip. And so there's that aspect, and like you had said, praying for specific things and getting wisdom. I know for myself when I was doing it, and I've talked to some of them even this semester, and when I said it, they're like, yes, God has done that for me too. And you pray that God would give you a face. And
Right.
one time he did, he put somebody's face in front of me, and I prayed for them for a while, and as the weeks rolled by, I just didn't see them, didn't see them, didn't see them. I thought they were going to be in my group, and they weren't. They were in a different group. I did happen to see them one time, maybe twice, and they were in a different group, because they have different teams that they do games with too. So we call them nations, and we take the opportunity being Christ for the nations. to also teach those students a little bit about that nation that we pick for that team. So they were on a different team or different nation, and I remember seeing them, and I'm like, okay, Lord, does that mean I need to go talk to them? Do I need to have conversations with them? And he said, no, I put them in front of you so you can continue to pray for them. So every time I stood, those 2 times I saw him, I prayed for him. When we had one of the last nights of prayer at the altar at the end, I saw them up there, and I was gonna go try to get to them, and I just felt like it wasn't necessary. I could pray for them from right where I was, and God could do what he needed to do. So prayer is massive, just like for missions trips. It's massive when it comes into camps. You can't have a youth camp, a Christian youth camp, without prayer. It's like
Right.
if you go on a missions trip without prayer, it's just a vacation or an
Oh
adventure.
yeah.
You know what I mean? So
Oh, let's veer off for a second. This is going to get me onto one of my little rants if I'm not careful, but
uh-oh, do you
talking
need
about
some thoughts?
vacation, right? Mission
Yes.
trips and vacation. I read not long ago when I was first starting to prepare for international missions. But how it's good to have one photographer instead of letting everyone take pictures to help make sure that people know that they're, the people that you're ministering to, that they're not like the zoo animals that are being observed. Because a lot of times when you have a large group of people going international missions, you have a lot of people taking pictures almost like if they're on vacation. Sadly enough, if you look at some of the pictures that are taken, it doesn't look like a mission trip. It looks like a vacation trip. And I understand that we should have fun on mission trips. We should be able to enjoy ourselves. But when all the pictures that we post on social media look like you've been having fun on someone else's dime, that's a problem. Because then you're misrepresenting the work that's being done, right? It shouldn't only be pictures that make it look like you're enjoying seeing sights or hanging out with people. It should be, this is the work we're doing. This is the ministry we're doing. And maybe a little here and a little there are some of the other pieces. But I think sometimes we don't moderate. I know I moderate it. And if I don't, my wife will call me out on it, because she's really good at that. But I've seen it happen to where people don't moderate it. They don't watch that carefully. And I've even heard other people say, I'm not going to give money to XYZ person because it seems like the money that I gave her was used for a vacation instead of the work that she talked about.
I think that's a valid it's a valid thought, and I think that
I mean, I'm talking about this on our show because we're called Uncomfortable, and we
Yeah,
talk about uncomfortable topics.
I'm trying to think about it in a way that's I'm trying to think outside the box on it, because I get people wanting to take pictures, and I think it's I don't think you could tell somebody not to take pictures, especially because they have their own, for some of them it'll be their own thing where they're like, they may use that for stuff in the future. I was a part of this, and so on and so forth. So you can't really police all the pictures on either side. You can't police it saying, no, you can't post that. You can't police it saying, oh, that was really good, we're going to use that. So I do agree that you should have a specific photographer that might be your person for that. And maybe speak to your people and be like, listen, when we're in this area, we want to avoid them feeling a certain way. So, unless you feel led by Holy Spirit, don't pull out your camera.
Now, let me tell you something else
Okay.
that we've seen that helps to mitigate that. And that is taking in small Polaroid style cameras.
Okay.
And what you do is you invite the people in and say, "Would you like a picture with us? Would you like a picture?" And then, so yes, you're taking your pictures on your digital device, but you also are providing them a picture that they can keep for themselves and use as they want. Because you give it to them right then and there, and they feel valued, because and a lot of times they'll say, "Yes, I want a picture with you," or "I want a picture with this other missionary," or "I want a picture with this other person."
There's connections that are made, right?
Right. You're making connections, you're building those connections, and it opens doors. And sometimes you can even speak to people that you couldn't speak to otherwise when you're allowing people to take pictures with you, right? Instead of it always being about what you want to do.
Yeah, it's like breaking out of that American mindset. That makes
Exactly.
so no, I like that actually even better than trying to control the narrative of nobody could take pictures, but do it like this. To say, maybe even say it like this: for specific times, it's only going to be the one photographer, right? During ministry times,
Right.
like that. But other times, when we're just interacting with kids in the village, when we're doing this or we're doing whatever we're doing, and you want to take pictures, okay, great. But let's try to confine that to a specific time. Let's do what we got to do, and maybe at the end, you can take pictures and do the pictures with them. Hey, do you want to keep a picture? Do you want to, you know what I mean? So, and then I would even say that you have to be careful about that, depending on what country you're in, because
Oh, absolutely.
some countries you can't, because you're there under the cover of,
Some countries you don't take pictures.
right?
Yeah.
So you have
Or
to.
you only, it's kind of like when I went to Colombia. I didn't take pictures when we were going on the one circuit where we were talking with the organization that works with human trafficking.
No, yeah, absolutely.
We took no pictures because they're trying to save people out of that situation. We're
Right.
working on building a relationship with them. However, they brought a photographer along that they knew who what could they could take pictures of and could not be taken a picture of. And they provided us with pictures.
Right. See that I would be I'd be I would expect to be more
So
accurate, better.
there's situations where you cannot take pictures. Even if you want to, you cannot do it because it can put people at risk.
Right.
And you don't want that. You don't want either the workers or the people being saved out of the situation harmed. So you've got to take that at the highest priority.
I think even here, though, when it comes to camps, think you need to be careful with that, because again, you're looking at other people's children that you're having to. You know what I mean? You can't just post any picture of anybody, although we don't tend to care and we do it anyway. I think it's respectful if you don't.
Oh, absolutely.
I think if you have your people who take pictures, okay, great. Maybe at the end of the week you sit down you with everybody and you let them take pictures on their devices, you take pictures on yours, or let them take pictures on their devices and have them tag you. And you just
Absolutely.
download the pictures and save them, right? So I think that would even be safer, especially if you're taking group pictures and big group pictures and all that stuff like that. So you just got to be careful. There's liabilities that exist that we might not be aware of, and like you said, sometimes in cases overseas, lives are at stake.
Oh,
So,
yeah.
okay.
Let's just be real. Even here in the States with that situation you're talking about with youth camps, lives could be at stake
That's true,
because
especially with human trafficking now.
we're dealing with children. Human trafficking in our country has become a huge thing.
It has been. Yep.
And it's extremely sad. It's horrific.
Right.
But without people taking a proactive action, it's only going to grow and it's only going to get worse. We have to, as a people, begin to have a voice. We
Yep.
have to speak against it. We have to begin to take action. If we notice something that's out of place, we've got to speak up. And I'm not talking about being some crazy lunatic that, well, I don't like the way they looked at me, and so I'm going to say something. No. I mean, you see something legitimate, a legitimate concern, right? We don't want to be people who called wolf. That's stupid. You know, you want to see, if you see a problem, actually talk about the problem.
Right.
But we don't want to cause problems just because, just for no reason.
No, I agree with
Now,
that.
We've got to be proactive, though, in protecting our children, whether it's in the States or abroad.
I agree. I don't think that, I think when it comes to children in any country, we need to be careful what pictures we're taking, what we're not, what we're posting, as opposed to what you're even taking. I mean, I think taking pictures is one thing, posting them is a whole nother thing.
Oh, absolutely.
If those people know where you went and then you're posting those pictures and they're following it, then go scoop those kids up and they'll never be seen or heard from again.
Well, that's exactly right. And
And
we don't want any of those problems. And
mm-mm.
as people that are working towards ministering to the souls and hearts of people, we need to have safety as a high, as of extremely high priority.
I agree.
You know,
It doesn't need to deter us from doing the work that we need to do, but we need to be conscious of it.
right. But we also don't want to hinder the work. Now, you don't put someone's safety at risk just for the work.
Well,
Now,
you don't. There's. I'll add a caveat to that. I'd say you don't just put their safety at risk for the sake of you getting these nice little pictures that you want or deciding to post them so it looks
there you
like
go.
you're being relevant to the world. Stop bragging. Why do you need to brag?
Oh, absolutely. I heard not long ago when I was at work one day, I heard somebody talk about how he couldn't stand all these people and organizations that would go out and just take pictures and try to show the work that they're doing. And he said that what he did instead of giving money away is he would take his wife and his children out. He would just buy a bunch of stuff and start handing food out to the homeless people and tell his kids, this is what you do. You don't look for recognition, you don't look for a photo op. You just give and you just help. And the reality is we have too many people in the world today. They're looking for the next Instagram or social media blurb that they can pop up there so they can take a quick selfie. Is it wrong to show the work that you're doing to those who donate? Absolutely not. What is wrong is when it's all about the social post and it's all about the visual. It needs to be all about touching the life for Christ.
I think when it comes to the people who have given into the missions trip or the camp, I think it's actually paramount to be able to document the trip, so to speak. I think it's necessary so that they can see, hey, this is what your money went to. Your money
Oh, I
went to
completely agree.
paying for our stuff here, doing for this there. This is why we sent people there, or this is why we had this camp, because here's the look, this was the altar. This is what happened at the altar. This is the kids having fun at the game time. This is, all that stuff is necessary. And to a point, it can be used for how do I say this? I don't think there's another way to say it. You can use certain pictures for promotional material. And it's not about promoting you, it's for the next round of donors that you may be asking for to donate to the next trip.
I think
I
what
think it
the
has to be
important
done
caveat is,
tastefully, though. I
I
think it
think
has
the
to be done
important
right.
caveat is what's the heart?
That's a valid point.
I mean, the heart has to be, I'm taking this picture not because I need glory, not because I need recognition, but because I'm trying to make sure that people know what we just did. I'm trying to honor those who donated by showing them the work I did, so I'm accountable for the money that was just spent, right?
I like
And
that.
I know that there's been seasons when I've taken trips that I had no one to take pictures because it was me and maybe two other people. And the time, and sometimes people would take pictures that were worth something, and other times it wasn't glorifying to the work because they were taking pictures of things that they liked instead of the work we were doing. And I understand that. At the same time, because when you're in the middle of the work, sometimes you're not thinking of the pictures, right? You're not thinking about trying to capture a moment to show people what you're currently doing. And sometimes it's the 5% of the time that gets the photos, and the 95% of the time gets none because you're so busy doing everything else in those times, especially when you don't have someone dedicated to take those pictures.
Yeah, that's why I think it's valid to have somebody that's dedicated to, because if that's their thing, it
Yep.
cover that a little more, but obviously you can't always do that. So.
Yeah, especially when you're just starting off. So if you are somebody who is just starting off leading missions, don't lose heart.
Right.
If there's going to be a little something I want to say that's going to hopefully help you out, if you're just starting to lead mission trips, don't lose heart if you don't have someone to fill every role that you need in the long run. Just trust the Lord. Take notes at the end of the day so that you can give a written account of what was done. And then as things go along, God will work it out to where you'll eventually have the funds or a volunteer for somebody to come and take those pictures.
Yeah, so I know we're getting close to time, but I'd be remiss if we did not at least address the mental and or emotional prep necessary for this. I know with camps, the mental and emotional prep main thing is kind of you have to get into a mode of like, okay, the next 4, 6, 8, 10 weeks, we're just gonna put our nose to the grind. We'll rest on the weekends and from the time we wake up to the time we go to bed, we're eat, breathing, and sleeping camps, kids, teenagers, whatever it may be. And it's exhausting, especially here in Texas, because you've got 100 plus degree heat that you're dealing with too. So it can get exhausting. It can become overwhelming. And so you have to also do some self-care, a little bit of self-care in that, it, not the same as normal, but you got to do something to at least, make sure you're hydrated and all that jazz.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I know it looks a little different when it comes to the mental and emotional side of on a missions trip, because you've got the added caveat, not only of ministry, but also of the fact that you are leaving your place of comfort. You're leaving your country, you're leaving your family and or friends. So can you
Oh, yeah.
share a little bit about what goes into preparing that mental and emotional state to be able to get on a flight and leave the country.
I think first and foremost, prayer. I personally like to lead out by fasting before I go into a mission trip. However, I end my fast 4 to 5 days before I leave. And I know some people like to fast all the way up until, however, not eating enough food and having the proper nutrition can actually lower your immune system. And the word says that we're supposed to use wisdom in everything that we do. So what I like to do is I'll fast for whatever time I feel like the Holy Spirit has called us to. And then 4 to 5 days before the trip, I start making sure I have 3 meals a day, taking my vitamins, whatever supplements I need to boost my immune system, so that when I get on that airplane with that, box of people, because some of them are healthy and some of them are not healthy, because not everybody flies with wisdom. If you know what I'm saying, you get on there and there's someone hacking their lungs up and you're like, Lord Jesus, please help me not to catch what that person has.
I'm writing this down that you're saying this whole 4 to 5 days before, like I'm notating all of this that you're saying right now.
Oh, well, hey, you can all you and I talk all the time. You can ask me, I'll tell you. But and then I like not only do I go into prayer, but I like to begin to start praying also specifically about what he's going to want me to teach on or preach on. What is it you have a heart to do, Lord? What is it you're saying for this region? What is it you're saying for this area? And I begin to intercede over that specifically. So I'll pray in general, but then I begin to pray over the message. And then I begin to start taking notes. Now, the Lord doesn't always let me use my notes whenever I take them, but I at least pave the way by preparing in the direction that I feel Holy Spirit is leading me in. And there have been times where I've completely written things out and I get there and he switches it up. He like does a complete switch up on me. I'm like, nope, you're going to preach this tonight. Okay, yes, sir. And you just kind of go with it. But I know some people have to mentally prepare to leave the country. I'm fairly adventurous. I don't know that I think that much about it because I like it. I enjoy it. I do prepare a lot on the logistics side of it because I want to make sure that I'm being diligent with my time. I want to make sure that everything's lined out so that we're not sitting there spinning our wheels with nothing to do. And I don't want to ever have an a, like 6 hours of idle time, you know, because we spent too much to get there. So I tell my teams on the ground, I'm like, okay, look, while we're here, utilize us as many hours of the day as possible. That way we're being as diligent as we can. If you run out of things for us to do within the church, let's go house to house and start ministering to people and talking to them in their homes. You know, of course, homes in the jungle is a little different. It's a hut most of the time. But some villages, they actually look a little bit more like a house than you would think because of some of the influences that are out there anymore. And the world is actually shrinking much more than we realize, with all the technology that's getting out there. But anyway, going back to the core question about preparing ourselves, I also try to research what's needed before I go into a region to figure out if I need to get any kind of vaccines, because I believe it's wisdom to even prepare in our health. Because what good is it for me to go to a region to go minister the gospel if they are subject to yellow fever and I don't get the yellow fever vaccine? You know, if there's a high probability of me catching that particular sickness and I don't take a preventative measure to keep from getting it, then that's kind of on me if I'm out for the count for a couple of weeks because I was stubborn. So there's preparation that goes into it. You got to research where you're going. Are there any special requirements of that nation? You know, is there anything you need to do for your health to prepare before you go there? And so forth and so on.
But what about the other aspect of it, though, when it comes to, let's say someone is going on their first missions trip, and whether they're younger or older, let's look at it from both standpoints. They've never been away from anybody in their family or something where they can't at least communicate with them on a daily basis. And a lot of times you're going to a place that your cell phone don't work, there is no internet, there is no communication. Sometimes for days, maybe even a couple weeks at a time. I know that at least for CF and I, they try to make sure that they can communicate every so many days back to home base, so to speak, and give the people an opportunity to try to communicate if they can. But what is that? How do you prepare? If you were preparing a team, especially a team of young people, college age students, I mean, you said your daughter's in her early 20s. I think one of your sons went with you one time, didn't he? And so how would you work on preparing a team ahead of time for an aspect of it like that that not everybody thinks of until the last minute or when they're there?
Well, like for me, I ended up getting a phone that supports satellite messaging. And the main reason is my wife already knows when we go to the Amazon jungle, I might have cell service, or I may be without cell service between 3 and 5 days. It just depends on where we are. And sometimes storms take out the cell towers that are throughout the jungle anyway, because of the way the weather is. And once that happens, it's just whenever they get it fixed. And I remember one time we were in the jungle and we were waiting on a riverboat to come get us. And we had to get up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning so that we could get to the beach of the river. And we sat there till noon because there was no communication. All the cell towers were dead because the power was out. And so we had no idea when the boat was coming. We just had to sit there and wait. So, perfect example, right, of being prepared. But one of the things you have to prepare yourself for is inconvenience. I'm going to be inconvenienced on this trip. The only question is how much? And so I have a choice. I can either choose to allow myself to be patient in these situations, or I can get myself all worked up and stressed out. Well, might as well just let go because there's nothing you can do about it, right? Easier said than done, especially when you come from the United States and you're used to everything happening pretty quick. And but going back to your other question, what would I do preparing a group of young people? One, In the world we live in today, I would make sure you have a smartphone that has some sort of satellite communication, like an emergency communication. And the reason I say a cell phone is because it's a whole lot cheaper in this day and age to have a cell phone that supports that technology than to purchase a communication device that works off of satellite towers. It's also cheaper than buying a satellite phone. And the service to use satellite phone or text messaging is extremely expensive, or internet. So having just an emergency communications tool that you can reach out in an emergency for texting will save you if you're in a life and death situation. But my preparation is I inform people that you are not going to have communication for up to 3 to 5 days at a time. If we have communication beforehand, it's a blessing. Do not expect it. However, one thing that people need to look into today is, especially since Elon Musk got Starlink, if you're in a situation, you could purchase a mobile Starlink and take it with you if it's supported in the region that you're going into. And that would give you network communication. You could use apps like WhatsApp, which is one of the most widely used in the world, to communicate back to your home base. And that's generally what I use, is WhatsApp. Some people use Facebook Messenger, but I find WhatsApp is one of the easiest when I work with people internationally, because that's the one that they tend to be most familiar with.
So, okay, I know we're going to close this out. So, I will say this: when it comes to that, whether it be missions trips, camps, what have you, one of the things that we didn't address this, but although you kind of mentioned it, is you said prepared to be inconvenienced for
Oh,
both of them, for mission trips and for camps. You have to be prepared to be inconvenienced and prepared to come out of your comfort zone, because if you're used to things going a certain way and you're ministering, even if you are at a church somewhere or you're ministering to kids out in the jungle or in a small town or even here at camp, you have to be able to come out of what you would consider to be your comfort zone to be able to reach out to them, because they're not all going to hear, understand, and receive the same exact way.
Oh, yeah.
You have to be prepared almost to be, and I hope you hear my heart with this one, almost to be another person, almost. Not that you are a different person, but be able to flip a switch. So you have your just regular everyday Joe life, and then you have the, like, I'm missions trip man, or I'm,
Oh, let me
yeah.
give you a perfect example, brother. Perfect example. Exactly what you're talking about. I get on the boat in Peru. Some of these boats are now starting to have satellite so that they can have internet the whole time that you're on the boat, now that it's out there. And it's one of their selling points, right? Well, in our culture, it's almost a taboo to have your social media on without having headphones or something on, right? And it playing your stuff out loud for everyone and their brother to hear.
Right.
Well, I'm in the airport. Or I'm in the, trying to get to where I'm going, or I'm getting on the plane, or I'm on the fast boat. It doesn't matter where I am. There's people, and you're in a locked-in situation. You're in the cockpit of the plane, and people are just listening to their social crap, or they're just sitting there on the boat and they're just scrolling TikTok or their Instagram and their little reels. And some of it's stupid, some of it's like, oh my goodness, I wish you wouldn't listen to that in public, right? And it's like driving you crazy. But you have to realize, first of all, this is not your culture. This is not your group. You're the one that needs to acclimate to them. And so I had to make a choice when I went back into that situation and I sort of seen people do that. And I'm like, okay, this is not my culture. This is not my group. They don't have the same considerations that I've grown up with because of their culture. All right. So I need to kind of adjust myself because I'm here trying to reach them. I'm not here to change their culture. I'm here to
Right.
change their heart and lead them to Christ. I'm here to teach them. I'm here to empower them. I'm not here to change culture. So that's the one thing that I would say is you've got to be willing to, like you say, flip a switch. I'm not in the United States anymore. I am the one that has to make something, a different choice here, right?
Right. Yeah, I know. Even with camps, you just have to be willing to. I mean, sometimes you're hot, you're miserable, you're exhausted, and you have a youth pastor or leader or kids pastor or leader come up to you, and they're just giving you the what for about something, and you're like, I don't know why you're even. I can't do anything about what you're talking about. I don't even. I don't do anything anywhere near what you're asking for. Why are you talking to me? And they just give it to you. Well, then you have to be inconvenienced and you have to get up out of your spot and you need to go talk to someone else and communicate that. And guess what? Now, because they hit you up, you're now their point person.
There
At
you
least
go.
get them referred to who they need to speak with. And sometimes that means you, instead of just saying, hey, if you go over there and you make a left and you make a right, sometimes it means, hey, can one of you guys watch my spot? And I'll walk them over to that location that's going above and beyond. And you're exhausted, you're hot, and you don't want to walk 50 feet. You don't want to walk 5 feet.
Absolutely.
And so you got to get up and do that. And to bring that to them and help them get that resolved, because for them, that might be where their world is, and they might be in this place of, oh my gosh, I can't find my kid, or I can't find this, I can't find that, we can't get this done. It's like, okay, hold on, hold on. Let's take a deep breath. It's Wednesday. Things are getting hectic. Everybody's tired. Your kids probably just left their stuff on the field or something. Let's contact lost and found. Matter of fact, I'll bring you in. You can talk to the merch people. They have a radio. They can communicate with everybody. I don't. So I'm gonna bring you to a source that can get you to a better source of information. And you did it. And look what you might have done for them. And then on their way out, they'll stop by. They might stop by and say thank you so much. I appreciate it. They might not. They might not even look at you a second time, ever. You just have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with not being comfortable. I mean, the title of our show is Uncomfortable. We talk
No, that's
about
right.
all that stuff all the time, and things that I don't like talking about sometimes at all. But you're always like, yeah, we should talk about this. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about that, or vice versa. And so, but that's just kind of the nature of it. You sign up to do that stuff, you got to be ready to flip that switch and say, okay, you know what? It's not about me. It's not about me right now.
That's right.
I'll take care of me when I have the time to take care of me. Right now, it's not about me. So,
That's it. Well,
Kirk,
guys, we're
what
going to
you
wrap
got
it
for
up
him?
right here because, I think we could probably go on another hour.
We are.
And I don't want to exhaust everybody, but I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation today.
Yeah.
And guys, we really hope you join us again. Also, we would like to hear from you. We would like you to reach out to us at uncomfortable@mooseministries.org and let us know any show topics you'd like us to talk about. Also, if you have prayer requests, mission trips that are coming up, outreaches, please shoot us a mail. We would love to pray with you and join you in prayer. If you'd like to support us, you can go to mooseministries.org/give and you can support us there as well. Guys, God bless you and you have a wonderful day.
See y'all next time.